chapter 33. Martin leapt to the fore as the crab came charging forward.
Hurry! Get down to the sands!
He shouted urgently.
I'll try to hold this thing off. Go on, get going!
The three travellers would not run and desert their friend. They backed away slowly to the edge of the rocks, while Martin, facing the crab as a rearguard, followed them. The crab would make a scurrying attack, then back off, suddenly changing tack to shuffling sideways. Not having time to use his sling, Martin hurled several well-placed stones at the maddened creature. They made a hollow clunking noise as they bounced off the tough crab shell. Each time it was hit, the crab would halt, pulling its eyes in on the long stalks, holding one claw high and the other out level toward them. It advanced, for all the world like a fencer, minus his sword. The huge claws opened and shut, clacking viciously. From the top of the rocky outcrop where they stood to the sand below was a forbiddingly long drop. Logalog teetered on the brink, shutting his eyes tight at the dizzy height. Without a second thought, Gonf grabbed the shrew's scrubby coat with one paw, held tight to Dinny's digging claw with the other, and jumped. As Dinny felt himself being pulled from the smooth rock surface, he seized Martin's tail with his free digging claw. The crab dashed forward, only to find his pincers nipping nothing. Clutching paw to fur to claw to tail, the travellers sailed out into mid-air and plummeted downward, narrowly missing the jutting rocks which projected from the main mass. Bump! They landed flat upon the beach sand with a dull thud that knocked the breath from their bodies. Martin was first to recover. He sat up rubbing his back, feeling as if his tail had been dragged out by the roots. Dinny lay face down. He lifted his head, snorted sand, and looked up at the rock face.
Ooh, or look out, he coming down,
he warned. Sure enough, the crab was scrambling and scuttling sideways down the rocks toward them with surprising agility. Ignoring his injuries, Martin ran to face the armoured menace as his friends recovered from the fall. Grabbing a stave, he hit out strongly at the creature. With a loud clack, the crustacean caught the flailing stave between both his claws, immediately locking tight onto it, wrenching the weapon from the warrior's grasp. Martin felt totally helpless as he readied himself for the crab's next move. Whirling and prancing about on the sand with his slit-like mouth gaping and frothing, the crab clutched madly at the stave. Martin could only stare in amazement at the dancing monster as it jigged about, holding the stave high in its murderous claws. Logalog tugged at the warrior's paw.
Come on, Martin, let's get going while we can. That crab doesn't seem to want to let go of the stave.
Ha!
Gonf snorted.
It's not a case of wanting. It hasn't got the sense to release the stave, can't you see?
As if to prove his point, the little mouse thief joined the crab and actually began dancing along with it. Round and round they went, Gonf comically following his strange partner's every twist and turn. Furiously, the crab waggled its stalked eyes, opening and closing its mouth as it pranced crazily around, still clasping the stave tightly. Martin and his friends nursed their aching ribs, trying not to laugh too hard. Tears streamed down their cheeks at Gonf's antics.
Oh, stop it, Gonf, please!
Martin begged.
Come away and leave that silly beast alone!
Gonf halted. He doffed a courtly bow at the enraged crab.
My thanks to you, sir. You truly are a wonderful dancer.
The crab stood glaring at Gonf with a mixture of ferocity and bafflement as the mouse thief continued his polite compliments.
Oh, I do hope we meet again at the next annual rock pool ball. Those shrimps are such clumsy fellows, you know. They tread all over one's paws. They're not half as good as you. Incidentally, who taught you to dance so well? Keeping all those legs going together. You didn't trip once. My, my, we really must do this again sometime.
The crab stood stock still with the stave held high. It watched the four travellers depart along the shore, their laughter and jesting mingled on the breeze.
Wait till I tell Columbine. Maybe he'll give her dancing lessons if we ever chance this way again.
Brr, he'm a wonderful foot-topper.
What about you, Din? You could have joined them for a threesome reel.
It had been an eventful day. Now, as the noon shadows began lengthening, the tide flooded in. The friends wended their weary way along the interminable shoreline. Salam and Dastan stood firm in the distance, never seeming to get any closer. Tired and dispirited, They trekked onward, feeling the pangs of hunger and thirst. Apart from the odd seabird, whose curiosity had to be fended off forcefully, they were completely isolated. Logalog shielded his eyes, pointing ahead.
Look, what are those birds up to over yonder?
Some distance further on, gulls were wheeling and diving. There were two black, shapeless objects upon the sand. The birds were concentrating their attack on the smaller of these. Eager to see what was happening, the travellers broke into a trot. As they drew near to the scene, it became apparent that the gulls were harassing a living creature. Not far from where it lay, there was a ramshackle lean-to. Martin whirled his sling as he began running.
Come on, mates! Let's drive those scavengers off! Charge!
The creature was a thin, ragged rat. Gulls pecked ruthlessly at it as it lay unprotected on the sand. Under the fierce onslaught of stones and staves, the seabirds took to the air, screeching and wheeling above the intruders who had robbed them of their prey, and finally flying off to seek easier victims. Martin knelt and lifted the rat's head. The creature was very old and emaciated.
"There, there now, old one,"
he said, stroking sand out of its watery eyes.
"We're friends. You're safe now."
Logalog touched the rat's limp paw.
"Save your breath, Martin. This one has gone to the gates of Dark Forest."
"Dead?"
"Aye, dead as a stone. He must have been on his last legs when the birds found him. Let's get him to his hut."
Between them, they bore the rat into the tattered dwelling, placing it gently in a corner. They covered the body with an old piece of sailcloth. Then Gonf explored the contents of the hut.
"Look, mateys, water and supplies,"
he said triumphantly. There was a small quantity of dried shrimp and seaweed and a pouch of broken biscuit, but best of all, there were two hollow gourds filled with clean, fresh water. Dinny found a cache of driftwood. He began setting a small fire, using a flint from Martin's sling pouch and the steel of Gonf's dagger.
"Poor beastin. I wonder who him were."
The mole shook his head sadly. Logalog poured water into cockle shells.
"Sea rat, no question of it. He's been chained to an oar too. I saw the scars on his paws. Mine were like that once."
Martin found a thick, deep shell blackened by fire on its outside. He began shredding shrimp and seaweed into it.
"But you said they used other creatures as oar slaves, yet this one was a rat."
Logalog poured water onto the ingredients and set the shell on two stones over the flames.
"Aye, but there's no telling with sea rats. They're savage and cruel. Maybe that one did something to offend his captain. I've seen them laughing and drinking together, then suddenly fighting to the death next moment over some silly little incident."
Night fell purple and grey in long rolling clouds. A stiff breeze sprang up from seaward as the four companions stood for a moment in silence around the pitiful canvas-wrapped figure in the small grave Dinny had dug in the sand. After the brief ceremony, they watched as the mole filled in the hole, decorating the mound with coloured seashells he had found.
"Ain't much, but four better'n sea ratner do free."
Salamandastron flared crimson against the dark sky as Gonf began to sing.
"Always the tide comes flowing in, ever it goes out again. Sleep neath the shore evermore, free from hunger and pain. Morning light will bring the sun, seasons go rolling on. Questing ever far from home for Salamandastron."
Logalog shivered. He turned to the hut.
"Come on, you three. That soup should be ready now."
Martin bowed his farewell to the benefactor and followed the shrew inside.
"Aye, life must go on,"
he agreed.
"A dry place to sleep, a warm fire, some food, and a night's rest is what we all need. Tomorrow, we go to the Fire Mountain."
Far to the northwest of Camp Willow, the moles were making ready within sight of the riverbank. The great tunnelling was about to begin. Chib watched them from a plane tree. The feathered spy was now in semi-retirement. He had amassed a considerable store of candied chestnuts for his services. Still, he thought, there was no harm earning the odd extra nut by standing guard here. Formal and old Dinny paced and measured. Mole digging terms were bandied about freely.
"Needin' firm ground. Roots to make shorens too.
Good down at grading to make water flow right.
And rock movers, Billum. He be a girt rock mover.
Aye, but mind he don't cross no old tunnelin'. Don't want flood going wrong ways, her.
Above in the trees, Amber's crew were dropping down timber for the sluice gates.
Mind out below!
Tip that end up, Bart, lad.
Come out of the way, young'un.
Right, let her go.
On the ground, Loam Hedge Mice were stripping, cleaning and jointing the wood. Abbess Germaine rolled up her wide sleeves and joined them with a will.
Columbine, here, child, sit on the end of this log and keep it still.
She called out.
I'll mark it here where the joint should be.
Excuse me, Abbess, where do we put these pine branches?
A strong young mouse asked.
Take them over there. Mr. Stickle has his little ones pulling the bark and twigs off all the new wood.
Hey, Ferdy, I think I might like to be a carpenter instead of a warrior. What about you?
Cogs decided.
Oh, I'm going to be a warrior carpenter, Cogs. Posy, will you stop carving patterns and strip that bark?
Oh, look, here's Miss Bella with some big stones. My, isn't she strong?
Posy exclaimed.
Can I put these stones here, Spike? Phew, I'll have to go back for more now. I saw Goody coming through the woods. I think it's beechnut crumble and elderberry fritters for lunch.
Hooray, my favourite!
Ferdy said delightedly.
Don't forget to wash those paws in the river before you eat.
Bella reminded them.
But Miss Bella, all as work beasts get mucky paws.
Cogs protested.
Shows you've been working hard.
Oh, and what about little beasts? They get mucky paws just playing. You scrub them with some bank sand, young Cogs.
The woodlanders stood by after lunch until old Dinny was brought to the spot where the tunnels would begin. Three young champion digging moles were there. Billum, Soil Flyer and Earthclaw. They stood respectfully to one side as Formal escorted old Dinny forward. Billum presented the Ancient One with a beaker full of October ale. He quaffed most of it in one gulp. Emptying the rest on the ground, where the work was to take place, old Dinny recited,
"Moles a tunnelin' deep and far, moles a diggin' that we are."
Formal nodded approvingly. Old Dinny was quite a solemn mole versifier. He raised an gnarled claw to the three champions. They went to it with a will. Amid loud cheers, other teams would follow up, widening and shoring in their wake. The great tunnelling of Mossflower had begun. Hidden by a screen of leaves in a high elm, a wood pigeon was witness to a very strange scene in the woods south of Kater. Sarmina, armed with a bow and arrows, was talking to the surrounding foliage.
I know you're there, brother. Oh, it's no use hiding. The Queen of the Thousand Eyes will find you. You can be sure.
The wood pigeon remained perfectly still. No point in offering a handy target to a wildcat with bow and arrows, he decided, even if she were looking for someone else.
Come on out, Gingerveer. Show yourself. This is between me and you.
Silence greeted the challenge. Sarmina smiled slyly.
Think you're clever, don't you? Not half as clever as your sister. I know your little game. I'll find you.
The wildcat queen continued padding through the still forest, sometimes hiding behind a tree, often doubling back on her own tracks, always on the alert. Brog and Ratflank were sitting in the larder. As captains, they decided it was their prerogative to sample some of the remaining rations. The two officers stuffed bread and guzzled cider from a half-empty cask. There was a knock at the door. Hastily, they swallowed and wiped their whiskers. Brog stamped about, kicking sacks and checking casks, as he called out,
"Yes? Who is it?"
"It's Squint, the stoke captain."
A thin, reedy voice piped back at him. The pair relaxed.
"Come in, Squint. What do you want?"
Brog asked. The stoat entered. He stood to attention before his superiors.
"I followed Her Majesty, just like you told me to, Captain Brog."
"Well, where did she go?"
"South, into Mossflower. She took a bow and arrows with her. I kept well out of sight and watched. Funny, though, she kept ducking here and bobbing there, hiding between trees and so on."
"What for?"
"Her brother, you know, Gingerveer. She kept calling out his name. Went on like that for ages. I thought I'd better come back here and report to you."
Ratflank wiped a crumb from his paw.
"You did well, Squint,"
he began. Brog silenced him.
"You keep quiet. I'm giving the orders around here."
He turned on the unfortunate stoat.
"You thought you'd better come back and report, eh? Who told you that you had permission to think? Do you realise that you've left your queen out there alone in the forest at the mercy of any roving band of woodlanders?
But, Captain, you told me...
Silence! Speak when you're spoken to, Stalked. Now, you get back out there on a double, me bucko, and don't come back until my lady does, and that's an order.
Squint stood bewildered until Ratflank joined in the chastisement.
You heard, Captain Brog? On the double now. 1-2, 1-2, 1-2. Step lively, Squint.
The Stoke double marched backwards out of the larder. Brog and Ratflank fell back upon the sacks, laughing.
Oh, proper thickhead, that one, eh? Oh, it's not too bad, this officer lag, Brog.
I'll say it isn't.
Brog agreed.
Keep the troops on their mettle while I inspect the larder, eh?
Righto, Captain Brog. I'll go up and turn them all out for an arms inspection and chuck a few in the guardhouse for having dirty spears. You keep checking round here.
That's it, Captain Ratflank. You make them jump.
When his companion had gone, Brog rooted about under some sacks. He came up with a stone jar, half full of strawberry jam. Upending it on his snout, he smacked the bottom with his paw to free the sticky sweet. Some of it actually went down his mouth. The rest stuck to his nose and whiskers, and he gave a jammy giggle.
Too good for the troops, this stuff.
Squint dashed heedlessly through the woods, pushing aside bushes, cracking twigs and branches as he followed the trail. Sarmina was not aware that Brog had ordered her to be followed. Stealthily, she slipped behind an outcrop of firs, fitting the arrow to the bow as she followed her pursuer's noisy progress.
Come to me, Ginger Veer.
Sarmina crooned softly under her breath.
Run quickly, your sister awaits you.
Squint ploughed headlong past the firs bush. The string twanged mercilessly. He lay face down, with the arrow protruding from the back of his neck. Sarmina stood over the fallen stoat, her mad eyes seeing only what they wanted to.
There's an end to it, brother. You'll never trick me again.